Hello, and welcome to this edition of the Virginia Bioscience Podcast. I'm your host, Henry Wixon, a senior partner specializing in intellectual property with the law firm of WilmerHale in Washington, D.C., and a member of the Board of Directors of the Virginia Biotechnology Association. This edition of our podcast features a presentation from August 19, 2008, to the Virginia General Assembly's Joint Subcommittee on the Biosciences by the former Secretary of Commerce and Trade of Virginia, Michael J. Shule. Mr. Shule served in that role under Governor Mark Warner from 2002 to 2006. While in that position, he also served as the co-chair of the Governor's Commission on Biotechnology from 2002 to 2005. After completing his service, Mr. Shule returned to his role as a partner with the law firm of McGuire Woods, where he serves as co-chair of the Mergers and Acquisitions, Securities, and Corporate Services Department. Secretary Shule's presentation focuses on the activities of the Governor's Commission on Biotechnology, on the recommendations that were made in the Commission's various reports, and his views on why the Commission's recommendations failed to gain traction with policymakers in the Virginia state government. The Virginia General Assembly's Joint Subcommittee on the Biosciences is chaired by Senator Janet Howell and Delegate Mark Sickles. Our podcast lasts approximately 26 minutes. For more information about the biosciences in the Commonwealth, please visit us on the web at www.vabio.org. Thank you, and we hope you'll enjoy this edition of the Virginia Bioscience Podcast.
Secretary Shule, who was chair of the Governor's Commission on Biotechnology, and from what I've heard, a lot of people are very happy with the work of that group. It's just that none of the recommendations were actually implemented, very few of them. And maybe I'm wrong about that because I'm hearing some good things here today about what we're doing in Virginia. Secretary Shule.
Mr. Chairman, thanks. It's nice to be back here. See y'all, who I haven't seen in a couple of years. The description of the Governor's Advisory Board for the Virginia Biotechnology Initiative, which then evolved for some technical reason, which I can't now remember, into a commission, but basically was just a continuation of the same thing, really took place between 2002 and 2005. The first part of the report was broken into two parts. There were first steps, and then there was a leadership strategy to get Virginia into a real leadership position. The second report, which came out in 2005, and which is sort of, less ambitious, included some specific budgetary recommendations for the 2007-2008 budget, those, which I'll discuss in a second, were one of them Mark mentioned was adopted but wasn't funded, and another one was funded but sort of in the back door instead of the front door. In preparing for this, I looked back over those reports, which I hadn't really looked at in a couple of years, and I have to say in doing so, I was really struck by how good they were. They are measured, they're comprehensive, they're expert, and they're very creative, all of which indicates that I had nothing to do with them, really, but that they were done by a core group of real experts that were supported by a broad base from the industry, CEOs, university folks, people from all over the industry, and they really are worth your reading. They are very well done, and I can claim absolutely no credit for them. The reports really rested on about five key premises, which I think are consistent with what was just described. Premises number one was that the biotech industry is growing. It's growing fast, and it's going to continue to grow for the foreseeable future. Second, that as an industry, biotech is an economic development dream. It pays high wages. It attracts entrepreneurs. It attracts venture capital. It attracts highly educated employees. And it spins off university research, new companies, and a host of other good things. The third premise was that the biotech industry has and requires a peculiarly close relationship with institutional research establishments. That includes university researchers, government labs, and other research engines like the Howard Hughes Medical Institute. Fourth, that the ultimate location and growth of biotech companies is heavily dependent on the location of investment capital, principally venture capital. And fifth, that because of the great future of this industry, because of the many advantages that it brings to a state and to a nation, competition among states and nations to attract and grow the biotech and bioscience industry was already intense and should be getting even more intense. Now let me just go off the track for just a second in terms of what was said earlier about the marketing question. Is this a question in terms of competition? Is it a question of marketing? It is a question of marketing, but I would suggest that you will be misleading yourself if you think it is really marketing. It is mostly substance. That's what distinguishes other states from Virginia. There's some states that will basically do marketing, but they won't basically be successful. The states like California or Maryland or North Carolina, and I'm sure there are other states as well, Washington, what's driving their industry is real substance. For example, in terms of investments in public universities, which have really helped create biotech industries around the country, when you look at the map, UC San Diego, the University of Washington, the University of Texas, and the University of Maryland are four notable examples where major and continued and long-term state investment has really changed the context of the industry there and created a big industry in those locations. One of the other things, and this is just sort of an aside, looking at that chart, one of the weaknesses that Virginia clearly has when you see the layout of the industry nationwide is it does not have a really big, powerful private university with a medical school. So, for example, one of the other things that you see when you look at that map is the influence of the University of Pennsylvania, the influence of Harvard, the influence of Johns Hopkins, and the influence of Duke. And we don't have any of those things. So, after looking back over this report, I have to say that really nothing has happened since the reports were issued that undercuts any of the five premises that the report was based on. In fact, in certain key respects, I think we probably underestimated the importance of some of those things. For example, the growth of the industry. When we wrote that report, those reports, we really had no concept of what was going to happen with oil prices and what that has meant for biosciences. What it has meant that biofuels, biomaterials, substitutions for plastics, substitutions for gasolines have become a giant, both academic and commercial research focus all over the country. The Tobacco Commission, as Delegate Byron was saying, has recently made some significant investments in that area. And in fact, I would say perhaps the Tobacco Commission also made one of the earliest and most significant biotech investments in Virginia when they gave the seed funding for the Bioinformatics Institute at Virginia Tech. If anything, the biotech industry has had a broader and more rapid growth than we anticipated. And likewise, as the industry has grown, competition has grown. It's grown apace with the growth of the industry. If you look at what Singapore has done, Bob Skunda can tell you what Israel has done and the huge amount of investment in companies that are spinning out of there, one of them which recently bought a large employer in Virginia, Bar Pharmaceuticals, was bought by an Israeli company, Teva. And other countries, not to mention the states that were described below, are very heavily involved in this. And so we shouldn't really think of the competition as just what's North Carolina and Maryland's doing, but really is what is India doing, what is Singapore doing, what is Israel doing, what is Ireland doing. The biotech initiatives focused on recommendations linked to the five underlying ideas which I described, with one important caveat. With biotech, as with any other economic development type activity, there are things that governments can do well and that can really accomplish, and there are other things that really governments don't do particularly well. And so in our recommendations, we tried to focus on things that we thought were peculiarly suitable for government activity. So with that in mind, our recommendations focused on four key areas. First, the development of biotech facilities containing wet lab space aimed at attracting startup and early stage companies. And the question always comes up when this is discussed is, why can't the commercial development world simply build these facilities? Why do you need any sort of government assistance to do this? And the reason is actually, I think, somewhat, it's not immediately obvious. But what happens with these small startup biotech companies is they really don't have much credit. They're certainly not credit worthy. They're not credit tenants. They're not the kind of tenants that if you're a landlord, you can use to finance a building when you go to your lender. The result is that it becomes very difficult to build these buildings economically. What the state can do and has the opportunity to do, and what Maryland has done, is, in a sense, provide the credit for building these facilities. Once they're built, they then get leased up. People come out of our spun out of Covance, or they get spun out of a biotech park in Richmond, or they get spun out of other companies. They come into these, or out of our universities. They come into these facilities. They then grow, get strong, go off to their own building, build their own building, employ more people, etc. The state can uniquely do this, and not merely because the state can provide its credit, but also because the state benefits from these facilities in ways that individual developers don't. And that is because we get tax revenues from the employees who are going to be there. So when the state looks at its return from that investment, it's a different calculus than the return that a private investor would have. And it's one that I think the state has a very strong case for making. So that was the first area, the development of wet lab space and facilities. Second recommendation was the enhancement of the commercialization activities of our state research universities. One of the difficulties in any of these areas is, where do you put your money? I mean, traditionally, we have funded our state universities for basic research, and that's sort of the essentials of university research, and it makes perfect sense. One of the things we have funded less is that translational aspect, the commercialization of that research that's being done in our universities. How do you actually commercialize it, make it into something that the private world can use? So one of the second things we focused on was that commercialization activity. Commercialization activity tends to be much cheaper than basic research and have sort of a bigger and faster payoff in terms of the economy. The third area of focus was the creation of a partnership among researchers and product development partners, which we called the first one, the one we proposed for the 2007-2008 budget, the Smart Bio Partnership. This partnership was designed to position Virginia for research and market leadership at the convergence of the bioscience industry and the information technology industry. The focus was, where is Virginia really strong already? Obviously, information technology. Bioscience and information technology are converging at a rapid rate. The Bioinformatics Center at Virginia Tech is, for example, one of the examples of that. There are plenty of others. And so the thought was, the goal was, to create a partnership to bring these folks together, really a facilitator to have that kind of translational research, get the research done, get the research into the private sphere, get the companies aware of it, get everybody working together in that regard. And then the fourth focus of the recommendations was the mobilization of venture capital money to invest in Virginia biosciences companies. I think that pretty well tracks most of the things that were said before. I still think these are four great areas for this subcommittee to look at and for the Commonwealth to focus on. I'm sure in this constrained budget environment, as happened to us, it may take some special creativity to find a way to implement these types of proposals, although I do believe that, in fact, there are a number of ways to make that happen, even in times of constrained budgets. Mark asked me when I was preparing for this, he said, could you please reflect on maybe some of the things that you would do differently or would have done differently if you had to do it over again in terms of getting some of these things implemented? There were really about three of them that got implemented over the course of these series of reports. One of them was the commercialization fund, which got adopted in legislation but ultimately got cut out of the budget. The second one was the funding for the wet lab facilities. We had contemplated a funding of about $10 million for the wet lab facilities. What ultimately happened was that Philip Morris came along right at the same time and said, hey, we want to build a $400 million research, biotech research facility in Virginia. We need some help doing it. We're getting a lot of pull from Raleigh-Durham to build it there and from Greensboro. Let's see if we can work together to make this work. And essentially, the biotech facility's money is embodied in the Philip Morris building. The third thing I got, one of the recommendations, was sort of an effort to really focus on recruiting these businesses to Virginia, because we do feel like we have lots of assets. At the Virginia Economic Development Partnership, there was a particular effort undertaken to do that. It's had some success, and that was those are really the three parts that actually got implemented one way or the other. Now, in terms of what I would do differently, I'm really happy we have the Philip Morris facility. It's an extraordinary facility. What I'm not happy about is if we put that money into, just for example, a shell wet lab facility at in Prince William County near where the Lilly building was then going to go, now where Covance is going to go, near the American Type Culture facility, and it had been successful, which I'm confident it would have, then I think that would have established a paradigm which we then could have repeated in a number of replications. And so I sort of wonder, in retrospect, did we do all that right? I'm not sure of sort of the bird in the hand against two in the bush, and that's what we that was the profound philosophy that we followed. I'm not sure it was the right decision, but maybe it was. I think the other thing I would have done differently, I would do differently, is I would have worked harder to get the legislators to understand really what Maryland and North Carolina are doing. I think it probably is worth a trip to Maryland to see what's going on there. For a long time, Maryland did things wrong. One of the anomalies that I think y'all were being pointed out, Dr. Bannon, you may have pointed this out, was you had a lot of research dollars, but not a lot of company formations in Maryland. And sort of this anomaly, and it's really because of Johns Hopkins. Hopkins was very inward focused. It got huge amounts of research dollars, but it used it in a very inwardly focused way. It wasn't spinning off companies. It wasn't creating the kind of entrepreneurial activity that leads to biotech startups and biotech companies. The University of Maryland, on the other hand, was doing much more of that. And Hopkins has now sort of gotten into the game. And the combination of NIH, the defense establishments there, University of Maryland, and Hopkins now sort of focused on this has, I think, changed that significantly. And then I think the last thing that we would do differently is work harder to build the case among the legislators. We did a little too much of talking to ourselves and talking to the people in the governor's office, and not enough talking to y'all. And I think that that was a third mistake we made. So I'm happy to answer any questions. If anybody has any.
I have a question for Secretary. What lessons can you learn, or what, if there is there anything in common with CIT in Northern Virginia that we wouldn't in the creation of new wet lab space? What lessons can we learn from what's happened there to what we want to do in the future? Because this is a real problem in our area, and I've had businessmen talk about this in Northern Virginia.
Well, I would say, first of all, the CIT had a big role to play in the writing of this report, so they were very helpful and important in putting this together. I don't really know the whole CIT saga for the last few years. I think that the wet lab space, though, is a pretty discrete issue, which can be in which steps forward can be made without significant expenditures of state money, without incurrence of significant or unreasonable risk, and without even involving that much money. But we thought we could do the first one of about 25,000 feet for about a $10 million, one of two ways, either issuing about $10 million of bonds or providing essentially a lease kind of guarantee arrangement that would have provided enough support for a private developer to come in and build the building. We also thought that we could strike a deal with the time, and this has been a few years ago, but with Prince William County, in which they would have made some land available for us to build a facility. We all would have sort of gotten our money back once the thing got leased up and we sold it. So we think there are ways in which the localities that are interested in this can participate as well with some of the assets they have. The wet lab issue is one that is eminently, I won't say solvable, but it's something that you can very definitely take concrete steps to improve the situation. And I think that part of the issue is, it always seemed to be, when we were dealing with it, is this concern about we're going to build this thing. And what are we really doing? Is the state just getting into the speculative commercial development business? Is that what it's doing? Because the state shouldn't be doing that. How do you describe this? How do you characterize this in a way that it's not simply being in the development business? And I think that it's not simply being in the development business. I think it's a peculiar thing in which the state is uniquely positioned to help. And I think that the benefits to the state are not in making money off the rent or anything like that. They are in the creation of jobs and an industry and a place where these kind of companies, when they come out of our universities, when they come out of our other companies, have a place to go, so they don't have to go to Maryland. And I'm sure that if you talk to anybody involved in Prince William County, in Fairfax County, in Bob Skunda, Mark Herzog, they can tell you many tales of companies that have come out of here, Virginia, and had to run off to Maryland because there simply is no place to locate here.
Dr. Van.
Mark, that's really interesting perspective. Help me understand, up in Harrisonburg we have SRI. And contrast that to what that's doing as to what you just described. I mean, to me, the potential for a locality or a region to partner with the state seems to make a lot of sense. Is that not what you did up there?
I think that is what you did up there, although I have to say, Delegate O'Bannon, that was... Although I was involved in the early part of the negotiations with SRI, most of it happened after me, so I'm not really sure what the full arrangement. In some ways, another example is Carilion in Roanoke, in which that has really been a combination of the private sector and the public sector, Virginia Tech, the Carilion Health System, and Roanoke, working together to build that sort of relationship and arrangement in which the focus is really been on commercialization. It hasn't been so much on basic research. It's really been on commercialization. And we had that Carilion model in mind in a number of cases and when we did that.
And just real briefly, just some ancient history. I think it was George Allen that courted Motorola to come to West Creek in Goochland County. That never happened. You just can't predict the way things are going to evolve. But we did get Wimondo in Eastern Enrico. Now we have, this is how the transportation and all these things come full circle. We now have 288, and we have a nice robust economic growth in that part of this region. That's sort of the result of some of that.
Another example of that is Eli Lilly and Covance, in which Lilly changed their mind after a heavy recruitment, but the person who went in there in terms of the biotech industry, the person who ultimately took the Lilly space, is probably a better user in terms of the ultimate benefit to Virginia and the bioscience industry. That we couldn't have happened better. But, so.
Mark, can I?
Secretary Schultz.
Mike, I want to get your reaction to the subject of scale. The earlier, I think it was Delegate Perks, who was talking about the inflow of capital from overseas, but in many cases we're seeing the outflow of capital. And also some very large-scale projects that are occurring overseas. And we had a briefing from the Johns Hopkins University head of real estate who announced earlier this year a $1 billion life sciences park. Johns Hopkins owned 100 acres, and they convinced the developers that owned 500 acres around them to build essentially an integrated research and lifestyle park. And they together went to the local zoning board to adjust whatever they had to do in Montgomery County. and they have, it's called Vision 2030, a $1 billion capital program. I don't recall any government funding, but maybe some zoning decisions and proffering or whatever the process is that you go through. That is a scale and an order of magnitude that is so significant relative to a spec wet lab. Should we be looking to something at scale, or how do we think about the issue of scale? And one final comment about scale. 8 miles from the border of Virginia is the largest venture capital fund in bio, which is the New Enterprise Associates $1.5 billion fund. It doesn't show up in the statistics we saw because very little of that money is invested locally. Most of that's invested probably in California and increasingly in India and overseas. Scale, $1.5 billion venture fund, $1 billion Hopkins Life Sciences effort, mostly private, all private. Reaction to the notion of how we respond to scale?
Well, I think that first of all, I think that we have scale too. Howard Hughes is what, $500, $600 million?
Yes.
I think there's probably hard-pressed to find a more cutting-edge bioscience research place in the world than the Howard Hughes Institute in Loudoun County. And the scale of economic activity, research, government research, defense research, et cetera, that takes place in Northern Virginia is truly massive. I think that is a 25,000 wet lab spec building going to be sort of go toe-to-toe with a billion-dollar Johns Hopkins research campus? I think the answer is pretty obvious. But I also think that you got to start somewhere. And it's I think that one of the important things for me about this has always been, and maybe it's undeserved, but I've always had a very high degree of confidence that, particularly, for example, in this wet lab kind of thing, that it would be successful. I just talked to lots of real estate people, talked to lots of biotech people. It's just a very high degree of confidence that it would be successful. Now, John probably, I hope, would agree with that, and I know Bob would. So the question would be, it always seemed to me is that once you did it once, then you could replicate it. So it was not simply a matter of one thing. It's a matter of a beginning of something larger. So whether or not, in some cases, we match the scale that Hopkins can put out, I think in some cases we can match it. But also, I think you got to start to get the scale.
Thank you for downloading the podcast of the Virginia Biotechnology Association. For more information, please visit us at www.vabio.org.